This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Her Vantage on Enterprise and Her Vantage, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. Now, e-commerce has been rapidly expanding as more people are turning to online platforms to shop. Dubbed as the internet magician and Malaysia's superwoman by the media, on the show today, we have Fionn Tan to talk to us about her journey from an entrepreneur to the world's top internet marketing coach with a multi-million dollar company under her belt. Fionn, I know you've been around for a long time.
Yes, ages.
Ages. 1999, you came out on your
own. Yeah, I quit my job in November 1999, and I decided that I kind of hated my job. You know, wake up in the morning and you realize you can't go to work, you don't feel like going to work, but you have no choice because everyone tells you you have to work, you know. But then I was not the conventional type because in the past, my mom always tell me, okay, when you study, you must study very hard. So when you work, you must work very hard. Therefore, life is also very hard. Then I told myself, no, that's not me. You know, I want to do something that I really love. There's something that I could be passionate about. So I decided that I wanted to be my own boss. Mm. You know, but a lot of people say, wow, it sounds great. But the first thing you start thinking is, okay, I've got no money. So what do I do? So I wrote a 4-page business plan and I went around to people with money, meaning what? Example, like join events where there were business people around, go to associations, learn from others who have actually done it. Because we realized that, hey, if he has done, example, like 20 shops and he's used 20 years of his life to do it, but maybe by just speaking to him for 20 minutes, I could have gained some secrets. So from there and these batches of people whom I've actually never met before in my life, before the event. So I managed to raise $26,000 from the 4 pages of paper. That was in 1999.
Very, very gutsy.
Well, I guess that I was looking at it and I say, like, it's, when you're young, you start to think that you better do it early. You know, at the time, I was still 21. And therefore, a lot of things were very new and no one in my family was actually been in business before and decided to do this first online marketing or internet marketing company. What was it about? Not really sure, but we said, okay, it's going to be called e1net.com. No? And then people start thinking, hey, how do you pronounce e1net? Then we had to redesign the logo with a capital O and a capital N because people started calling us different names.
Eon.
Yes, and even my name, people call me Fionne, Fionna. It's always Fionn. Okay, and then like e1net.com with a capital O and capital N. And our thing was to sell things online and to help people to sell things online as well.
That was ahead of the time, you know. And at 21, did people take you seriously? 21 and a young girl.
Yes. Actually, when I was doing the pitching or presenting my business idea to the so-called new investors, they actually would just point at you and say, why her? Why her as a CEO? They'll say, hey, look at her. She's only 21. And she's not even that tall, you know. And people say, you know, there's this certain perception that the CEO has to be someone very glamorous, experienced, etc. But how do you become experienced? You can only become experienced by doing it. So how do you expect someone new to actually be experienced? You might have some ideas about it. So I went through that. You know, people will start talking. Not everyone would invest in you. There were people who did not invest. And I met them probably about 13 years later, and they look at me and they say, Fionn, you look very familiar. And when we were started talking and chatting, they said, oh my gosh, I was in the room when you were presenting and I did not invest in you. And they felt quite bad, you know. Not that I made them a billionaire yet, but the fact is, hey, she's been a survivor. So at the end of the day, it's about how easy is it for you to say, let go, you know, persistence.
Yeah.
So you have a passion, you have a goal. So at a point, you know, the first month, you don't see much sales coming in. Because when you run an online business, and at the point in the end of 99, year 2000, there were hardly anyone shopping online in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Even most people were not on the internet. Still, and we were all using dial-up, remember?
Yes,
I would tell my parents that I'll pull the lines. Okay, no telephone call for next 2 hours because I'm going to be online in my dial-up, like how many kbps. And so what we did with the 26,000 was we actually had an IT company to design a website and they charged us about 22,000
back then.
And I realized I've given away all my money and I was only left with $4,000 to start the company, which was actually not enough. So the first 1 month, 2 months, I was not getting any salary. I was paying all my other stuff, the rental and everything, you know. So what I did was, I remember the first month I made my first income, I received a check from the US and I was so happy. I went all the way to the bank trying to cash out the because I had no money left in my account. So I had to like try to cash out the US dollar check. And the guy at the counter was so surprised. He looked at the check and said, oh my gosh, ma'am, you can't cash this out. I said, why not? It's US dollar check. I said, okay, you have to clear it, etc. I said, okay, just clear it. And when do I get my money? Then he said, your check is only 4.04. It's only $4. So it cannot even cover the clearance fees. And I was like, oh, okay. And he said, you actually have to top up money in your account to clear it. I was like, oh no, you know. And most people, if you were at my stage and quitting your job and working so hard for this idea, you know, from an idea 3 months ago and now where you actually do it already and you only get $4, how would you survive? Would you actually still pursue the idea? So for me, what I did was I took back the check, I stood in front of the check and in front of the bank, I told myself, I will never ever get a $4 check again. You know, I said, it's so bad. But I said, okay, if I had not had that moment, maybe, or if I was not persistent enough, I would have just, it would be very easy to just say, oh, I'll just get another job.
Right.
I'll quit this idea and start another company. Something like that. So I said, no, I have to be responsible. I will get it done. I don't care how I do it, but I'll think about it. So I started doing a lot of research online. Example, like, okay, why is it that certain websites were appearing on the top? In the, those days, you have the Yahoo and then not only the Google. And there was definitely no Facebook
There was no Google, I think.
Google was like not the in thing. It was Yahoo, you know. Google came in probably about 2 years later and it gained popularity. So I was looking and I said, hey, why is this website ranked on top of search engines? And then I realized that I started finding my own website there for products that I was selling. So I made back my money in about 3 months later, actually, the $21,000. And I made my first million at about 23, 24 ringgit lah, in ringgit.
Still, right. You know, and then so what happened was also the time when you started the internet bubble, right? It happened and you just started your business. So how did it affect your business and... what did you do?
A lot of SMEs were thinking, wow, dot-com bubble, everything will close. So they are not going to move online yet. But I look at it this way. When other people are not doing it, you probably do it. Just like in share market, people are selling, you're buying. In property market, people are throwing prices and you are snapping the low prices, things like that. But it's easier on the internet because the cost of acquisition, the cost of doing business is a lot lower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard of people who actually would survive on instant noodles for 3 months just to do their online business and then they became really, really rich. But why is it that we are all sipping our blended coffee and etc. and saying we've got no money, but if we could just save the money from all this unnecessary stuff, we could probably throw it into our business as well.
Right.
You know, so I say, okay, and I was pretty hands-on. So I would get feedback because we do a lot of seminars even since the year 2000. We interact with a lot of SMEs and new want-to-be sort of entrepreneurs and they tell us feedback. When there's a problem, then that becomes an opportunity.
Mm.
You know, so when I start to make some money online, people started coming to us and say, hey, can you teach me how to do it? Can you really like coach me? And then I was, oh, but it's too expensive to consult one-on-one. So we decided to do a class and put everyone in and put computers. But in year 2003, not everyone has a laptop. So what we did was that we put a desktop and like 5 people would share a desktop. But after that training, we realized it was very difficult. Adults do not share. People hanging on to that. Okay, so it's about in any industry, whether it's markets up or down, there will surely be survivors.
Yeah.
And during that point, we actually saw a lot of people closing down.
Mm.
But probably because I in the beginning, we did not hire like really, really expensive staff. We actually had, we've hired some foreigners before. I paid them more than my own salary. I didn't pay myself. I paid his salary thinking they were experienced. And they look really good when I bring them out. But then I realized after 3 months, they don't bring in even a single dollar. Mm. Zero sales. So I had to cut them off. Mm. So it's a lot about letting things go.
Mm.
You know, if it doesn't work, we have to cut. We just have to cut it and switch. Do something else different.
All right.
If this product doesn't work, sell something else or add more.
Okay. So, and then of course, things have changed over the years, right? And so many players out there also, you know, I guess providing sort of service. How do you make sure that you're still on par or ahead of other players?
Example, like we, when we were in E1Net, we did a lot of different things. We were managing websites for some Fortune 500 companies. Okay. And then same time for SMEs, we were were doing website management in terms of template-based. We actually had a software that they were DIY. So at that point, there were not many templates out in the market yet. So we made good money from there as well. And it was not expensive, something like 4,000 ringgit, but it's DIY, do it yourself. So if one website or one software is $4,000, if I could get 100 customers, I would already have 400,000. And back in year 2000, we already started thinking about cloud technology because now people are talking about cloud. But in those days, we call it ASP, Application Service Provider. We decided we are not going to sell you a software. We're going to charge you a renewal fee because softwares, you need to have upgrades, you know, changes.
And that's recurring income
Yes,
as well.
And that's recurring income. So I said, okay, so the next year, they'll probably pay something about 1,006. So the same 100 customers will still give me $168,000. So we already thought of that early, in the early days. And then we started selling our own things as well. For example, we had our own E1 brand of wireless mouse. At that point, you know, if you go to Google, you type something like a wireless rechargeable mouse. In the whole world, we were ranked number one on top of the big e-commerce boys from the US, bigger than some of these IT companies. Right. And what brand was it? It was just E1net. It was like, okay, just a brand that we private label. Then we started learning about packaging, and how do you wrap the item. So I actually would wrap and I would go to the post office myself. And I realized all the silly mistakes I've made in terms of the package design and how we wrap it, how to make sure that it still looks like this when it reaches the customer, right? And then we will also look at things that are trendy. For example, during the SARS period, people were all very worried and a lot of exhibitions were cancelled or people were not going out. But during that time, I was actually selling SARS masks online. And I sold to Taiwan, I sold to Japan, I've sold to US. Wow. So Malaysians will not buy it because we were not affected. But I was selling things. So at that point, I was already doing cross-border.
Cross-border.
Yes, that was like early 2000s as well.
Okay.
And then the same idea, we would cap it there and then we were selling things during the swine flu, bird flu. You know, or even a H1N1. Of course, in Malaysia, Singapore, we will sell a lot during the haze timing.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, all these sort of things. I know you've got your 28 mall.
Yes.
Right? We'll talk about that in just a moment. I'm here with Fion Tan. Stay tuned to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Build financial mountains. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning. This is Frida Liu. I'm here with Fion Tan, who has been in e-commerce since 1999, and and she's also what they call her, the internet magician.
Some they call her the internet marketing queen.
All right. This is her vantage. We speak to women of influence and leadership. Now, as an internet marketing coach that has helped clients ranging from home-based small business up to MNCs, right? So what sort of services do you provide, right? And do you offer to these different kind of clients?
Okay, for example, for the bigger clients, we will do things such as website management, digital marketing campaigns, like now it's a social media campaign, or even the in thing now is about influencer marketing. How do they interact with the key opinion leaders? How do they, rather than just to throw a conventional ad, to actually do something very interactive where users get to interact with them. So this year we'll be also doing something called a influencer shopping carnival in June, where we want to look at how to bring more brands and to look at influencers and do a crossover event and to actually test them there and then, like, can you actually sell? Because in China, example, or in Hong Kong, it's now very popular to do things like live broadcast.
Okay.
And they can be very expensive. Some of them are like, you know, there was one of the top ones in China, with just a 30-second commercial, she was charging $3 million just for a 30-second commercial to her, for her to say your brand. And others will say, okay, I'll do a collaboration with you, I'll sell your products, and within 12 minutes, they could sell $1.2 million. So you don't see that sort of thing happening so much yet in Southeast Asia, especially Malaysia. So I do see a potential. We want to groom the next opinion KOL or key opinion leader or the influencers, but we want them to be healthy image. It's not about attracting just the fans, but are you attracting the correct range of fans.
Yeah.
And would brands actually use you? Because if I use the wrong influencer, it will affect my brand.
Right.
So we have to tell them what's right, what's wrong, what not to do and what to do. So those are things that we do for the bigger clients. We also train their employees. And if they have their own brand, we actually can sell for them as well through various platforms. We manage that.
Okay.
And on the other end, there are a lot of working adults, even mummies and retirees, and even students were saying, actually, why don't I also start my own e-commerce business? But I don't know what to sell. I don't know how to sell. I don't know how to do sourcing and things like that. So we have training that we train them. So we have regular seminars every month. They could actually go to the website, www.e1net.com, and they can check out the available dates in KL, Hong Kong. And then also, we actually have things such as like crowdfunding seminar talks. Because a lot of people has got ideas, but they do not know how to fundraise. On the other hand, there are investors who say, wow, look at all these big boys, you know, billion-dollar club, unicorn company. Yeah. How come the companies I invest in are not worth so much? The P/E ratio is so low. So they've got the money, but they do not know how to invest in startup. You know, so ideas like that, where we talk about crowdfunding, is a very good way for you to test your idea and to get things to share, to pre-sell your product. And from there, you can actually grow it into a business. So we have a specific seminar for that as well.
Okay.
So that's for the individual part.
Okay, so now you're in Malaysia, Hong Kong and China.
Yes.
Right? How did you manage to, you know, get your foot into these places? What's it like to do business there?
Very different, actually. When we started in Hong Kong in, I remember it's March or April 2006, we were there. We actually tried China a few months before that. But after being in Shanghai for about 3 months and in early 2000s, it was not easy for a foreigner or a non-local to start a company there. So it was very, very difficult. We have had cases whereby, for example, I would sign an agreement because everything is in Chinese and I can't read Chinese, so I'm like a Malaysian banana, as we normally say. And in English, it was 70-30%.
But in
Chinese, it was reversed.
Oh, dear.
And my staff, who was Chinese speaking from China, she looked at me and she said, Fion, she called me Chen Zhong. And she said, no, you can't sign this. Because why? The deal, the numbers were reversed. And then we realized that they were actually related in a way, the law firm was related in a way to the party that we signed
it.
I was like, oh my, wow, it's like we're very shocked. So at that point, I decided maybe it was easier to start in Hong Kong because being that time the British
and club,
everyone is very very clear, and for foreigners it's so easy, just go there, register a company, and everything is transparent. You know, the details are there and it's in English, not just in Chinese. Okay, because in China, when I started my China company, they actually asked us to do a business plan in Chinese, so I had to hire people to translate my version into Chinese at that point. So we started with Hong Kong, and surprisingly it was quite good. I remember when I had my first batch of students there, they have not known us. We were a new brand in Hong Kong, but they willingly came to my course. I'm not talking about regular seminars, but they paid for more, what we call like coaching programs. And the first class we had something like 40 people. And these were, I did not know anyone there. I had one or two friends, but they were not in business as well. So I was like, from scratch, they just believe in us. They understood what we were selling. And they actually say, okay, I can trust this Malaysian girl.
Right.
And they went through with
us. So when you look at your company as well, what is the culture that you have with you, with your staff?
I think for us, we are quite informal. We cook together. We actually have people who sometimes one person will cook and everyone else eats together. Because we have a pantry and then we will have different type of pots there. Steam. We even have like steamboat pots. We have grills. We have oven. You know, and I think it's about enjoying good food together and a bonding time. I think it's very crucial. And they will share jokes, and everyone is multitask. So you're not expected to say, okay, like you do your stuff and the person next to you is like working her ass off and you're just sitting by yourself. We want people who can actually help out. Because we are still really, really small. You know, we are a small group, but we have big dreams, and we look at it, it's like if you can go with us, long time. We have a lot of staff within with us, and then they go into bigger firms. Mm. They were hired by public state companies and big, huge companies. And I let them go, of course, because I could not pay the salary that they were offering, which sometimes could be double. And I look at them and say, it's okay, you can go. Or some of them, they have to go and work for their family. Mm. So we let them go. But we were still friends, you know, right. When we have like corporate dinners together, buffets at hotels. And sometimes you see them joining us as well. Or when they have time, they just drop by and just hang out with us. So I think it's very important to be very forward with each other. Like you come and work with us, and we are still looking for more talent. Mm. Because nowadays it's very, very difficult to get good people. Mm. If a certain person does not click with the culture, we would not renew them as well. There were instances whereby people would come in, they are just so into their world that they don't even speak to the person next to them. And the rest of the people decide, I think we should not have them because it makes the office very gloomy.
Yeah.
People don't feel happy. So then maybe it's not the right person to be there.
Mm. Now, you've also received many awards and recognitions. 2009 Hong Kong Distinguished Brand Awards. 2008 Top 10 Women Entrepreneurs Malaysia. Her World's Top 50 Most Inspiring Women. And a lot more. Tell us a little bit more about these awards. I guess maybe which one was most, you know, special for you?
I think for me would be... Actually, there were awards, and most importantly, it was very lucky because I didn't have to pay for any of the awards. Because a lot of people say, oh, I've got like 20 awards. But I make it a reason that I try not to pay in a way that I only go for awards which I feel that, they actually look at you, they give it out. So I was very privileged to actually be recognized. So I would enjoy things such as the SME Corp. They had one which was the top 10 women in business. In business, I think that was very good. Because in the top 10, you get to see people from different walks of life, and they've been very successful as well. And it was an event whereby the Queen actually presented our Raja Pumaisri. I actually gave out that award. So it was like the one of its kind. I was so privileged for that. And another one I really look very cherish is one of it where it was also the whole event. There was only one businesswoman award. They had like one for music. Of course, they gave it to Dato' Sri Nurhaliza. And then they had one for sports. They gave it to Pandalela. Mm. And one for women in business. And they gave it to me.
Ah.
That was also presented by our Prime Minister.
Okay.
So I was very, very fortunate. Okay. Then in Hong Kong as well to be recognized. So I think things like that, people come and endorse you. Even sometimes, I remember when I gave birth to my first daughter, 2011, and there was a closing date for two awards, and they had me like fill the. I came out from the hospital, went back home. They said today is the deadline. You have to fill up this form. It's like 5 pages, and I was there on my bed, you know, while breastfeeding, typing up the thing. And then I got okay, I got shortlisted, or I won like top 10.
All right,
you know, there was a JCI Creative Young Entrepreneurs Award.
Yes.
And I was also one of the finalists for this Ernst & Young during the time.
Now you've also written a couple of books, and one of them is The Malaysia Journey, Progress and Diversity in 2003, right? Projected by the World Economic Forum. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Yeah. At that point, actually, the World Economic Forum came to Malaysia. They did an edition in Malaysia. I was also fortunate enough to be one of the expert or speakers. And after that event, they actually approached us and said, okay, we wanted to come up with a book. So they had different people to talk about different things. For example, they have like a YTL group talk about something about retail, you know. And then they say, internet, we want you to write about it. I was, okay, great. So I wrote a chapter for that particular book as well.
I see.
And then later on, a lot of people who couldn't come for training, and they started asking us, do you have a book that we can buy? I said, okay, I have a mini, like short few pages, 20 pages sort of ebook. They said, no, we want more. So I said, okay, I could come up with a physical book. So I had a American publishing firm, the largest one, actually approached me. So they were publishing a lot of business books. They approached me, and then we signed. We got the manuscript done. But eventually, I decided to self-publish because I wanted it to be so colourful. I wanted to be in colour. And at that point, they were also saying in New York, they said, oh, okay, we have to put like the Asian writers on hold for the time being. So I said, okay, it's okay. I've done everything. I'll just self-publish because, so then that was what we call the Internet Millionaire Checklist, 10 Simple Steps to Making Your First Million Online. Mm. So it's available online. They can buy it from the website, internetmillionairechecklist.com. They can also buy it from 28mall.com, or they could go to an office and purchase that. There's also available in selected bookshops
as well. All
right,
so tell me about this 28mall, this new project of yours.
Yes, so when we've always been selling things and training and for example, whenever I see something that I like, I actually put money and put time to develop it. For example, we even had our own brand of certified organic skincare. Because I really love, I mean, which lady do not like skincare? Like me, I'm like a typical one. I will read all about it. And I love essential oil. So I actually have my own brand called SYL Japan. So I paid the money. We got the trademark done. So everything was in Japan and it was really expensive. And we started selling online. But then I realized, what if I wanted to do 10 different brands? Doesn't mean I have to spend 10 times the money and the strength. So I was thinking, is there a way for me to collaborate with the brands? And the only way was rather than to train them. For example, we have had students in Malaysia, for example, very low profile. And sometimes they could just be a one-man show, but they could make $70,000 online. How? Because a lot of things can be outsourced. You can have like copywriters, you can have designers doing this, and you can control it from home. And your staff are not even in Malaysia. It could be from anywhere in the world. So, but when I charge them a training fee, I only get paid one time. So when they show me, they say, oh, Fionn, look at me. I've made like $1 million net profits a year. I've got nothing. Fionn Tan does not get a commission on that. Okay. And I started thinking, oh, I have to start planning for more. So I decided to do a platform, just like the big boys like Alibaba. We were an Alibaba trainer as well. We were the appointed trainer for Malaysia and Singapore to train their customers. And at that point, I started realizing, okay, the reason why Jack Ma is so rich is that he's not actually selling the product. He's selling the platform. And the rest of the SMEs and the brand owners are all putting our things onto their platform.
Okay. But when you do this platform, aren't there other players already? And what do you think yours are? What would be different?
Yes. The first thing we look at is, okay, B2B, I won't touch because Alibaba was doing it. And the closing process was just too long, you know, for us. And it means that you actually have a human to go and do the quotation and negotiate. Then we look at the B2C. There were a lot of players already. But what was the problem then? For brand owners, a lot of things, for example, they will say, Fionn, I have my product there. But at the same time, there are also other people selling my product. They could be unauthorized dealers. It could even be consumers who are selling products they've just purchased from your shop at a discount, and they're reselling it for a minimum profit online. So they are competing, and they are also, you can't control the price range.
Right.
Number two, I've had incidents whereby the brands come to me and say, okay, we will tell them, if you have a product, put it in different platforms. You don't have to be exclusive. But most important is your own.com. So there was some of them who said, Fionn, you asked me to make it very clear, very good description. And guess what? Someone else copied my products.
Ayo.
And they're selling a replica. Okay. And then the third one is they look at, can I sell overseas? Most of the marketplaces you see are only selling domestic.
Yeah.
They do not control in terms of looking at whether it's authentic or not. The same product could be sold by a lot more people. Like just like last night, I had one big brand was telling me, oh, this product can't be sold online. This product is exclusive. A product can, B product cannot. So they were asking me to help them push A product. And I did a research in one of the biggest marketplace we have in Malaysia. And I showed her the screen. Look at this. Your product is 1799. Your dealers are selling 1299 online. And they are also from other countries selling here, ranging from $1,001 to $2,000. So you are limiting your own distributors from selling online, but there are already people selling online, and you can't. And they actually, the funny thing was that they actually had an official store on this marketplace, but yet their brand was still replicated. So I gave it and said, okay, you should warn or just inform that particular marketplace to remove the other guys. So we noticed there was a gap. And for the consumers, you notice in Malaysia, shopping online is only about 5%. That's what the government says. But some media, foreign media actually predicted us at only 1%. So it's between 1% to 5%. 95% to 99% Malaysians are still shopping offline. So what we did was that let's do a platform. We call it 28mall.com. Number one is we gave them 100% original brands guarantee. So customers would never feel buying a fake or replica product. And we sell new products. So it's not secondhand. Number two, for the brands, we give that guarantee that when you work with us, we give you a one brand, one seller. One brand, one seller. So that you don't have to worry about people throwing prices, your dealers coming in. And we only work with reputable brands, or we look at the supplier, we make sure that they actually are selling original. Yeah, so and in some instances, it's about retailers. You know, certain products that are really, really expensive, we do an O2O program, which is online to offline. So online, they might put a deposit, a booking, and then they walk to the shop, example, expensive watches. You can't expect them to buy a 300,000 ringgit watch online and click a button. They actually want to try on and choose to make sure everything is new. And we do not want to risk delivering a $300,000 watch because things can happen. So then they could actually go to the shop. And another thing is I'm shopaholic as well. So when I look at things, I always look at it and say, hey, okay, is there a better deal? There's always this thing called a better deal. So we decide to give a very good loyalty program, which means every time they make a purchase there, they actually earn points, which we call a HP or Hongbao points. So it could be from 8% up to 28%. Okay. So, example, if I buy a mobile phone, it costs me 3,000 ringgit and I get 8% of that, which is in points. And what do I do with points? I use the points I can exchange for actual product. 2 days ago, I was at a bank credit card redemption program, and then the gentleman next to me was telling me, wow, I have to spend like 10,000 ringgit and I only get back 7 ringgit. And I said, oh, okay. I said, well, but on our website, 100 ringgit, you get 7 ringgit back.
Okay, right.
So that's very big. So when you get the points to exchange for products, it's at a very high amount. So we aim as a 28 mall to be the best choice for better lifestyle and your best choice in terms of rewards.
Wow.
So that was how we positioned it. And to help Malaysian brands to sell overseas. Why? Because if they were to approach us for social media marketing or to do digital marketing for them, we have to go by campaign basis. And different people have to manage different websites. But if everyone is on the same platform, you have a store within 28 Mall, all I have to do is promote 28 Mall. That's one thing. And then it's easy because I can have a control of the Facebook accounts, the Instagram, the YouTube. So we can manage it easier. So you don't pay as much. You just pay the cost of, it's actually even cheaper than hiring a staff for 3 months. But what we do is we earn long term. Why? Because when you get sales, I get sales as well. You know,
so and you're thinking win-win.
Yes, we are looking at, for example, like Malaysia, we have very unique products like coffee, you know. So the other day we had someone who in Hong Kong who purchased coffee for like $600 Hong Kong dollars, and she was looking at a particular brand. Okay, so she paid the money, etc. But then so happened in my Hong Kong office, I had B brand. So, and a B brand was giving very good rates and it was a brand new thing and they were very supportive of us. So I said, okay, would you want to try this other brand? Because the original A brand did not have stock. The supplier was still waiting for new stock. So I didn't want to keep the customers waiting. And then she could try that out. And then she said, oh, okay, this is recommended. So they will top up as well.
Wow. So very exciting times for you with this new baby of yours.
Yes, correct.
28 Mall.
Yeah, that's my first, that's my online baby. And of course, I have my new baby as well, which is now 14 months.
Physical baby. Yes. Thanks for being with us, Fiona, and sharing your life journey with us. I'm speaking to Fiona Tan from e1net.com. You've been listening to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.